This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
So, for Christmas this year, my brother and sister-in-law got me a fucking Kindle.
Whoa, really fancy.
Did I ever tell you that? So fancy.
What are you reading?
Okay. Quinn, what am I not fucking reading? I just finished a YA book called The Court of Rose and Thorns. Is that it? Have you heard about this book?
No. Is it great?
It's like all the rage.
I mean, I'm a grown-up, so I usually read grown-up books, but go ahead.
I don't know if it's YA because there was some sexy
time.
You
do read a lot of YA.
I do not.
Yes, you do.
Why do you say that?
That you recommended to me before this was YA. It makes me think you might only read YA.
Oh, House of Cerulean Blue? That one?
Uh-huh.
That was like a year ago. I don't read.
So you don't read, and when you do, you read exclusively YA. That's what I'm hearing.
No, I actually don't think this is a YA book because I think it's a little scandalous.
I think you're wrong. I remember reading Christopher Pike and there was like tons of like sex scenes in it when I was like young.
Maybe I'm showing my age and being like, children can't be reading this book. But I just read this book that it was so popular because I get books on Libby from the library. By the way, this is not an ad, but I just have to say it's the best. Libby is
hopped on the other day.
It's always so amazing.
You know why? Because I read about a case I wanted to cover for this pod.
Yes.
And then I found out there's a really good book on it. And then I was like, I think I don't want to do the case because if I just do shitty online research, it's going to spoil it for me. And I'm actually interested in reading the book. So this will be one of those actual legit book report times.
Yes.
Which are few and far between now that I'm in school. So you're welcome, everyone.
But so I just read, I think it's the Court of, and there's like there's a ton of books. It's a series. Mm-hmm. I actually have to look up if this fucking book is A Court of Rose and Thorns. Is that it? Okay, hold on. If it's YA, I'm going to jump off of this building. Court. No, it is an adult fantasy series.
Okay, she reads adult books. You heard it here first.
I think...
You are such a big girl.
Thank you so much. But adult fantasy. Anyway, I'm reading this book and it's pretty. The reason I read it is one, it's very popular. And I was like, I got to see what the whole scuttlebutt is with this. And then like 2 years ago, I was in Winnipeg and I sat next to this person who was reading and I just struck up a conversation, which honestly probably was very annoying for them because they're just like, let me read my fucking adult fantasy fiction. But they're like, you have to read Court of Thorns and Roses, and I read it, and it's a quick read, but like it's kind of like Beauty and the Beast, and it was pretty it was pretty funny, it was pretty wild, and maybe I'll read the second one of the series. I don't know, it's as I was reading it I was like, what the fuck is going on? But it's pretty there's some spicy moments, but not really. Anyway, just do you want me to give you the log line? Here it is.
Dying for it.
A Court of Thorns and Roses is the first book in Sarah J. Maas's adult fantasy series, is a Beauty and the Beast retelling with fairy lore influences. The story follows 19-year-old huntress Feyre Archeron, who kills a wolf in the woods to feed her family. In retaliation, Tamlin, a powerful beast-like immortal fairy and High Lord of Prithian, kidnaps Fira and takes her to the magical land. Now I am reading Bridgerton, so that's where we're at emotionally.
Reading Bridgerton. Oh, I love it. Oh, Carrie. I just finished Tana French's The Hunter. I recommend it. Oh, but I did read the Searcher.
Tana French is fucking great. Tana French is great. Her stuff is really good. I read The Witch Elm, which I covered in this podcast. I think in a Patreon. I also covered, she has the like series, and I think I read the first two books in the series, but I have to get the other ones, and they're always on loan from the public library.
I have all of them.
Great. I know what I'll be doing, but I'm so accustomed to on my little Kindle because I can take it.
I can't do it. I really, really need a physical book.
The thing I like about it is when I'm reading at night, it has a little backlight. And so when I go on the train or I'm in a car or something, it just fits in my little bag. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, my plan is to go to bars and just sit and read because I really enjoy reading. Anyway, it's really helping me. Yes. Reading
Actually,
while drunk?
That would be smart. You should just start doing all your reading in public because that's also how you meet a man in 100 days or some other thing.
Is it really? Is that going to be my new thing?
I think it's a good way to meet people because you're putting yourself in public even though you're doing kind of a private thing. You're just putting yourself in man's way.
I just need to be put in man's way. Yes, but here's the question though, Quinn. When someone's like, what are you reading? What do I say? The Bridgerton novels?
No.
An adult fantasy?
You're right. We need to have a prepared answer.
I need to be like, I'm reading Jack Kerouac's On the Road. Like, I need to come up with like some sort of asshole.
Too douchey. Yeah,
too douchey. What would be an appropriate book that I could... I'm reading Pride and Prejudice for the umpteenth time. I'm reading all of Jane Austen's. Like, what do you think would allure?
You're right. Write in, dear readers. Let's take a poll. Let's try to figure out what lie Carrie should tell.
What is it I'm reading? Oh, I'm reading all the sports statistics of 50 years. I'm reading.
Oh, God.
I'm reading Tom Brady's biography. Like, what is the appealing? Worst?
What is appealing?
What is appealing? I'm reading Wicked.
God.
Which, by the way, I've heard is fucking insane. And the actual story of Wicked is like wild, is totally wild compared to what's in the movie. And apparently it's because Stephen Schwartz, the composer of Wicked, which is an interesting parody about a Rambutan chair. No, when he wrote Wicked, he was at a party and someone was recounting the story that they were reading. And he went and started writing the musical before he read the book. So he didn't realize how not true to the actual book of Wicked was before he wrote the musical. Little known fact.
Oh, interesting. So I didn't even know there was a book.
Jared actually was recounting it to me. And he looked it up online, and it's pretty fucking crazy. Like the amount of like
what
it's.
You just keep saying it's crazy, but I can't picture what's crazy about it.
All right, give me a minute. Hold on. Okay. Maybe we're going to take a minute. Okay. Now, for those of you who have already read it or want to read it, please cover your ears. Okay, the novels. Let me see. So, 5 years after something, Elphaba connects with her former schoolmate, Prince Fiero, now married with 3 children, and the two begin an illicit affair. Elphaba makes an attempt at assassinating Madame Morrible. Fiero is caught and arrested by the secret police. Elphaba then takes refuge in a convent. I haven't read this. Like, apparently the lion, there's like essay with the lion, or the lion gets raped by something. I don't know. Like, there's like a lot of like...
The lion gets raped. I mean, truly.
I don't know. I got to look it up. I didn't do enough research on that beforehand. Anyway, moral of the story is I'm reading on my Kindle, and it's really fun. And I went to the gym today, and I just was reading on a treadmill, which is kind of like my new favorite pastime.
Oh, I love doing that as well.
And the nice thing about a Kindle is it's like one hand, and you just like keep boop, 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 booping it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and it is more convenient than reading a book, especially like if you're laying on your side and you're reading, Kindle's easier. Mm-hmm. And these are things that technology, thanks technology, Thanks, Jeff Bezos. Great job.
Oh, God, don't even.
Ugh.
God help us.
God help us.
You want to hear a funny story?
Mm-hmm, I do.
So the other day, Spencer and Jamila wanted to make martinis and mm-hmm. they were coming over and they texted Adam, who is at work at the store down the street.
Yeah.
And they said, do you have dry vermouth at home? Because we're out buying some stuff like groceries. Should we get it? And he's like, yeah, we have dry vermouth. And then after he hung up on them, he realized like that he had maybe used it cooking or like there was no dry vermouth. So what he did was he bought dry vermouth at his store and walked it to the house so that he wouldn't be made a liar.
Yeah.
But he made a really interesting call that I have to shout out. He put it in the toaster oven so that when this is so good, so that when Jamila and Spencer got home, they were like, they looked everywhere, couldn't find dry vermouth, called me because I was upstairs and they were like, do you have dry vermouth? I was like, yes. And I gave it to them. And then they texted Adam later and they were like, oh, we had to borrow like da 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 da. You were wrong. There's no dry vermouth. And Adam got to text back, well, did you check in the toaster oven? And they're like, what?
Stop.
And then they open the toaster oven.
Ugh.
And it's in the toaster oven. Like there's dry vermouth in there. It's just so good.
I'm obsessed. They knew he was at
work. And they knew he was at work the whole time. So it like it just looked like, of course, doesn't one always keep their dry vermouth in the toaster oven?
Oh my God.
I mean, the best. Legitimately the best.
The payoff of that, of being it's like, so I was good. Right, is really strong. Is really
and like to get to look
strong.
At someone like they're an idiot and be like, well, did you check the toaster oven?
Yeah, I don't know why that escaped
your mind. I'm
going to
start doing that all the time. Like putting something I know Matt's going to need in like the craziest spot so I can do that.
Wow, that like, is like
where's
maniacal.
That is
pathological.
Like, did you check in the garden shed? Like it's just like
so, did you not check in the gazebo?
Yeah, it's so
really,
weird.
That'd be the first like, place I checked. Wild. That's so maniacal, and I love that. And the payoff of it, again, I think I told this story, but when I was on Wheel of Fortune, the tour, there was a guy, they would often give like a fun fact about themselves. Mm-hmm. And one guy's fun fact, he was an electrician. Mm-hmm. And he's like, whenever I go to a home that has an Alexa or like a Google, some sort of like virtual assistant vibe, he says, I set an alarm for 4:43 a.m.
Why?
So that when he's gone, an alarm will go off in their house at 4:43 a.m.
Oh, so rude.
It's like, I think he could have been a serial killer. Like, because I enjoyed it because I'm like, that is commitment to the bit. Very specific. But it was also like, it's such a commitment to the bit that you're not even there to see the payoff and they will never know it was you. But in that way, in the same token, I'm like, you're an asshole. You're cruel.
You just
because
love
you're,
that you're fucking with someone.
Like,
yeah.
You want the power. Like, it's a little bit of a like, I just want to know that I can fuck with people at 4 a.m.
Totally.
And for that, I'm like, you scare me, but I respect you.
I respect you.
I respect you. Please don't
let's tell stories.
Okay. By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily.
I get to go first, and I gave
you
guys
first.
A cliffhanger last week.
Dun, dun, dun.
And now I'm back, and I'm going to tell you the story of the Jerome Grand Hotel. I got really into haunted hotels this week. I don't know why. I think it's because I'm booking
kind of
like Costa Rica stuff, and I just got into like, travel mode where I was like, I should do haunted Costa Rica. I bet there's something fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Or some sort of murder.
Information from Reddit, which you just can't go wrong. Arizona Central and Phoenix Ghosts. So the first thing that happened was that when I was reading, like, I think it was this Reddit link where people were talking about staying in the hotel and the guy that was like, I had a crazy thing happen to me at the Jerome Grand. This is the story that he tells.
You might have said this, but where is the Jerome Grand?
In Arizona.
In Arizona. Okay. Arizona's got some freaky shit going on.
For sure. So this guy stayed there in the Jerome Grand with his wife and his 10-year-old daughter and her friend. And this is maybe a decade ago. And it's supposed to be haunted. So like they get there and the dad is talking to the girls and being like, yes, there are a lot of ghost stories. It makes sense. It's like a historic building in a historic town, but you don't have to be scared. Ghosts aren't real. But he lets them like stay up reading ghost stories before they go to bed. And his wife goes to sleep and the girls go to sleep. He usually stays up later than most people. So he's hanging out. He's trying to go to sleep. And then he starts hearing noises. And he said it was a sort of soft sound, hard to describe accurately. It was like the rustling of fabric or something, or like, and he was like, what is this? And it was coming from the bathroom. And so he's like, I'm going to start timing it with my watch to see if it's happening regularly. Because if it's happening regularly, it probably is just something explainable.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, okay, it happened. And then a minute went by and it happened. And then 5 minutes went by and it happened. Then 9 minutes went by and it happened. Then 30 seconds. And he's like, it's quiet. It's louder. It's quiet again. It's louder. But like, it is... He's like, am I making this up? I can't, because sometimes it's loud enough. And then he starts to see shapes poking out of the bathroom door and then retreating. And he says that he heard voices and he would hear a voice and then realize it was somebody walking by the room in the hallway, and like he'd calm down. But sometimes it seemed like the voice was coming from inside the bathroom, and he's like up by himself, scaring himself.
The feeling of not knowing where the voice is coming from and it feeling so close to you. I've had that. Is fucking terrifying.
Yeah. And he's lying there like his heart's pounding, like he's doing that thing. And every time it happens again, he gets more scared. There's no way he's going to go to sleep. So eventually he like creeps out of bed and tiptoes over to the bathroom and is like outside the door. And then he like doesn't hear anything and like goes back to the bed. And then he like creeps back and he like, he's just so scared. He spends an hour doing this. And then he's like, I have to just look in the bathroom. And he goes in, he stands there in the dark with his hands on the light switch, waiting to hear a sound so he can catch the ghosts and turn the light switch on, which I love. Like, yeah. Boo. To the ghost.
He's trying to scare the ghost.
And he's like, as soon as I hear it, I'm going to turn on the light switch. And then he hears it and he turns on the light switch and he realizes what it is, because he's able to see it happen this time. And it's that they had a bucket of ice water in the bathroom, and every time a piece would melt and fall off it, it would make like a different kind of noise. Sometimes loud, sometimes quiet. And he said, I lost 3 hours of sleep over melting ice. And he's like,
it happens to the best of us. It happens to the best of us.
So he kills the spirit of ice water by like dumping it out. And he says, in conclusion, that is what I think ghost stories are. And then he uses a word I didn't know called pareidolia and apophenia. And I think that those have to do...
Pareidonia. Let me see if like what, but like pareidonia, let's think of it. Paranormal would be pair, like out of donia.
A psychological phenomenon that causes people to see patterns or objects in things that are actually vague or meaningless. So he was seeing like a pattern in these noises and ascribing stuff to it, but it was meaningless. Apophenia is the tendency to see patterns or connections in random and unrelated things. I guess they mean the same thing, but, it's just the idea that you, like we talked about in the last episode, you get something in your head and it's like our minds are a really, really powerful thing.
Totally.
He says that because of his fear that night, which was so palpable, so intense for him, and his belief suddenly that there was something paranormal happening when he his whole life has been like, I don't believe in that. He was really interested in just that phenomenon. So this having happened, he joined the West Coast Ghost and Paranormal Society and started getting really interested, even though that was a bucket of ice. He was just like, I'm really interested in this. And he starts going on all these investigations. It's sort of like learning that something might happen made him really interested in like getting closer to that. Like can suddenly really happen.
Yeah.
So he says, my team never went on an investigation where they didn't find something, but I never saw anything. So he's like, I never experienced anything. We're going on all these things. They're seeing stuff. But then one night, one of the members asked him to go with him to a private residence who was having like a paranormal activity to come investigate. And he went, and it's him and his friend Daryl, and they're using all this machine stuff. And he said, we're talking to the ghost. So we're like, are you here? Is there a presence here? And the homeowner had said, it's my dead sister, Stacy, haunting me. So they were like, Stacy, do you hear us? And they use audio recorders so they can play it back. But they didn't even need the audio, where at one point they said, why are you here? And they both heard a really garbled, help me.
Ooh.
And no. He gets so excited because he's like, Daryl, did you hear that? He's like, yes, I heard it too. And he's like, oh my God, that was legitimate. And they're like, that was a woman's voice saying, help me. And I completely heard it, and it's on tape. This is wild. So then, just to make sure, because they're skeptics as well, they start searching the house for any kind of equipment that could have been used to trick them. And they don't find anything. And he says, oh my God, it was like this amazing paranormal experience. I'm rethinking everything. And we're cleaning up the room, and then we heard it again. But this time it was just garble. It was like, it was like the same. He said it was the same voice, the same volume. And he goes, but I was close enough to Daryl to actually pinpoint its sound, which was his stomach gurgling. And his stomach had said, help me. Like, in the sense that he had his stomach growl and it sounded like a person saying, help me. But then when his stomach growled again, it just sounded like a growl, but it was the woman's voice. Like, he's like, that's what that sound was. And he's like, our brain was trying, because we were looking for a ghost in that moment. And we were talking to a ghost in that moment. We believed the sound we heard was a woman's voice talking back.
Did you hear that? That's my stomach growling right now.
Help me.
There it is. Did you guys hear it?
Did you guys hear it? That's a ghost of my food past.
Feed me, Seymour. No, but have you ever seen that thing where it's like, it's one word, and if you look at one word, you'll hear it one way, and if you look at another word, you'll hear the sound the other way, but it's just the same noise. It's like green needle, blue. It's whatever totally it is.
It's the power of suggestion. And he says, I don't think hotels are haunted, and I still don't really believe in ghosts, but it's really interesting. The reason that he was staying, or that his family went to the Jerome Grand, is that it has a lot of deaths, a lot of suicides, a lot of murders attached to it, and it's a historical hotel, and the town's really embraced the mythology of it all, and that it's haunted. It's been listed as one of the most haunted places in Arizona. And the general manager, so his dad and uncle bought the building from an old Dodge corporation in 1994, and they only had 6 rooms there open at first. But already, when they only had 6 rooms, they were getting reports that people were hearing voices and a hospital gurney being wheeled down the hallway.
I don't love that.
They're skeptical, but not for long. The third floor is the most haunted part, and it used to be a hospital, and there was operating rooms there, and that's where most people died, so that all tracks. And people have heard coughing and wheezing, and there was a lot of patients that died of tuberculosis, which was really common at the time. And people have seen hospital employees, like a doctor, a nurse. People have seen patients. And again, the gurney sound. Like, it's very, very creepy. And they, because they were getting so many complaints about the gurney sound, they changed the carpeting. Because they were like, which I love, because it's the idea that a ghost gurney, the sound would change if you had better carpeting. I like love that. And he's like,
I wonder
weird.
If it's like actually like,
he's like, it didn't like, work.
Well, I wonder if it was the like the food, the room service cart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. It
could have totally been that.
It could have totally been that. You're right. And not a gurney. That makes logical sense. While it was abandoned, there were psychics that came to, chat with the ghosts. And they did meet this ghost there that was like the head nurse who liked to hang out in what's now the restaurant area. but used to be the dispensary. So that tracks for her. And she was really upset when they talked to her, these psychics. And she was like, you know, we used to have these really nice dispensary desks and they got moved and I'm not happy. So the owners moved them back. And then the psychics went back in and were like, the nurse seems really happy. Thank you for doing that. And so she hasn't caused any problems since. There's also a ghost cat on the third floor, meow, which I'm like, why is there a ghost cat if it was a hospital? That seems bad that there was a cat on the hospital.
The cat had to keep the little critters away. It's like a bodega cat, but for a hospital. They have to like shoo away the like little sanitary pets.
I'm going to level with you.
Well, I think at the time,
people feel it jump onto their bed. Can you imagine like these little paws? Beep. Like so cute.
Aww,
but
so
they hear
cute.
That all the time and they feel the cat like going up against their legs. They can hear it meowing and then the ghost will curl up on their bed and they know that because suddenly there'll be an imprint the size of a cat where it had been like lying in the bed. And in 2008, pretty recent, somebody staying in room 20 got a picture of the ghost cat looking right at the photographer. And they keep that picture in the hotel at the front desk where they're like, here's the ghost cat. It was real. The room that gets the most complaints, accolades, depending on how you look at it, is room 32, which was the site of two possible suicides because it was a hospital room that had a balcony. And supposedly a minor who was in a wheelchair somehow climbed up, like climbed, got out of his chair on the balcony and went over. And also a businessman shot himself. So there's a lot of activity in that room. And there's, I don't know why everybody was killing themselves. And then there's also the ghost of Claude Harvey. I just like it because he's one of the only ghosts with a name. He was a hospital maintenance worker and he died in 1935. They don't know why. It's never been solved. He was found underneath the elevator. And people are like, okay, he was murdered, but nobody knows what happened. They are like, the elevator crushed him to death. But why was he under the elevator? And the company didn't want to be held liable at the time. So they didn't do an autopsy or have any x-rays. So people are like, what we think happened is somebody murdered him and put his body under the elevator to disguise that he was murdered, to be like, it's, he was just crushed by this elevator. But what are you doing lying under the elevator? People that work the graveyard shift at the hotel see him all the time and they see him as a shadow against a wall. Nobody ever sees his actual presence, but they see his shadow moving around and they can hear him cough, sneeze. They just hear him all
fart,
the time. He's around.
Stomach growl.
He's hanging. Yeah. He's, help me. One time the guy that worked at the hotel got a call at the front desk and he from a room that wasn't occupied and he went right there and no one was inside. So little weird things. Definitely children because every hotel has haunted children. And
of course,
definitely babies crying, people calling to say there's a baby crying in the next room and they go check and nobody's there. There is a ghost boy that people see a lot that's 4 or 5 years old and he's just... They said he's running up and down the halls and either laughing or crying. And I'm like, does sound like a kid. They are always either laughing or crying. he also just stares at you, stands at the foot of your bed and stares at you, which I'm like, kids don't really do that. So.
Ugh.
What else? Okay. The Travel Channel hears all these stories and they're like, we're going to go film Ghost Adventures here. And they got a bunch of stuff on tape. Door slamming. Voices, weird dark masses, crew members being like, I feel weird, I'm tingling. And the guy that was posting it was like, this is the real deal. It's, we have to acknowledge that this is really happening. So then I went on TripAdvisor to see if I should stay there. And it gets a really cute review. This was my favorite of the reviews. So I'll read it to you because it's really cute. My husband and I were staying in Sedona and decided to spend the night at the Jerome Hotel. We asked to stay in room 35. The hotel's very clean and the rooms are small but nice. Room 35 is where the little boy is at. Well, our experience started around 9 p.m. and never stopped. Streams of light through the night in the room. We backed up to the rock cliff and the drapes were closed. My husband was awakened by something tapping him very hard on the arm. Got an answer to the question when we asked Daniel how old he was. Someone in the room said, 8. We had a great time and got lots of pictures and lots of evidence. This is a must-see if you are a paranormal person. Haunted hamburger was awesome. Also have the giant piece of chocolate cake.
Wait a minute, a little haunting with a side of chocolate cake?
And a hamburger that they call the haunted hamburger?
Haunted hamburger? That's so fun. Jerome Hotel,
you're killing it.
Literally. I do wonder if like a lot of these stories have the people that commit suicide in there because they wouldn't, like, there's a belief that like
that we're not like an arrest.
Yes. Like, I wonder, yeah. that does seem to be like a common theme in haunted stories.
It does.
That I noticed.
I also think, again, you could imagine that there's one ghost in this whole hotel, but that people have ascribed all different activities to different ghosts. I feel like that happens a lot in these haunted hotels where they're like, here's the 19 ghosts that live there. And you're like, how do you know it's not just like one guy being like,
just one guy,
eight. And then acting like a cat at the foot of your bed.
He's a voiceover artist. He's a voiceover artist and a mime. And oh my God,
I want
to
meet that ghost, the Foley artist ghost. Clip clop, clip clop, clip clop.
All ghosts are Foley artists. Let's just be honest. They're all their own
Foley artist.
Or is it a Foley artist? Or is it a ghost Foley artist? Foley artist. That's a hard thing to say. Ghost Foley artist. Foley artist. Wow. All right. I'll stay there. It reminds me of when I was in Arizona and I was talking to one of the theaters. We were at the Orpheum in Phoenix, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I think I told you guys this story, but it's worth repeating because Arizona is crazy. But it was like he had pictures of a woman in his theater. Like he had pictures of a ghost. Mm. It was so fucking weird. And he talked about how there was like wet footprints, like bare footprints on like oily almost, like you could see it. But he also, like, his grandmother was a medium. So he was, it's just, yeah, there's people, man. People be people. And shall I tell a story?
Sure. We're here.
We're here. I got this information from Mamma Mia, the musical. I'm telling you this story. Just kidding.
That's so good.
Could you imagine? Right. Tamron Hall, CNN, LID Bible, and Unilad. I'm going to introduce you to Steve Carter. Steve Carter was placed in an orphanage at 6 months old in Hawaii. And he stayed in the orphanage for 3.5 years. And by the time he was 4 years old, he was adopted by his loving parents, Steve and Pat Carter. And his name was changed, and he is Steve Carter. So he's his son's father. He's his father's son. So Steve and Pat adopt him. They have no idea how he was left at this orphanage. They don't really know where he came from, who his parents are. But he was adopted into this like incredibly, incredibly loving family. They adopted him in Hawaii. They went to Tennessee. And then by his time in third grade, he was in New Jersey. So he grew up mostly on the East Coast, but long way to travel from Hawaii to Tennessee to New Jersey.
Yeah.
Kind of an interesting move. And he grows up in an incredibly loving home. His parents are great. They love him unconditionally, but he doesn't know where he came from. And it has to be really hard because every time he's at the doctor, they're asking for his family medical history and he doesn't have an answer. And it's 2011. He's 34 years old. He lives in Philadelphia with his wife and they're trying to get pregnant. And I think this lack of knowledge is weighing on Steve and he mm-hmm. wants to figure out where he came from. And so he wants to start a family with his wife and he just wants some more information. And one day he's getting ready for work and CNN is on in the background and they're playing this amazing story that you might remember about a young woman named Carlina White. Carlina White is a woman who was raised in a family in Atlanta and she was told certain things about her life, but she was missing some like major information. And she ended up going online and looking up missing children. And she was able to find out that she was taken from a hospital in Harlem.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Totally.
And she was reunited with her family and she had a daughter herself. And I think she also wanted, you know, but she like looked at this picture of this young woman and it looked like a picture of her. I forget what episode I talked about this in, but I did cover the story of Carlina White. So this story it awakens something in Steve. And so he hears this story and it kind of just like he has this guttural feeling like, oh, maybe I should look if I'm a missing child. Mm-hmm. And so he goes so and he weird. Gets ready
Why
for
would
work.
You do that?
I mean, he doesn't know where he came from. Yeah. You know, like he was put in an orphanage at 6 years, at 6 months old and adopted at four. Like he has no memory. The name that he was mm-hmm. given, his birthday, like none of it. He just doesn't know mm-hmm. where he came from. And I can imagine he hears this story of Carlina White, who found her birth parents and was able to be reunited with them. And, you know, she also did find out that her mother kidnapped her. So not great. So he's on his way to work and on the radio, he hears the story again. It was like really big at the time. Everybody was talking about the story and his gut was telling him that he should look into this himself. Something compelled him to look. So he mm-hmm. just went online and he searched missingkids.com. Pro tip, missingkids.com. And he searched the words Hawaii male missing 34 years.
Whoa.
The first image that pops up is a picture of the six-month-old child.
Just a mirror.
It's one of those spam where it's like, it's you were selected. It's like, to win your birth story. So the first image comes up is like a child, and then they did an age-progressed image of the six-month-old baby found in Hawaii, which mm-hmm. I don't know that fucking technology, but... The age progressed version, he says to himself, holy crap, it's me. Uh-huh. So all they have is a 6 month old baby and the age progression. And he's like, damn, that age progression looks a fuck ton like me. That's weird.
That is weird.
And so he's like, okay, whatever. Like, how accurate can these things be? This just feels pretty bizarre. And so he starts to send that image of the age progressed image to his friends. And he's like, hey, who do you guys think this cat looks like? And they're all like, you. We think it looks like you, Cat Steve. And he's like, great, cool. So he contacts the Hawaii Missing Kids police or whatever. And he's like, hey, so was looking online, saw a picture that looks like me. Do you think it's me? And so the police are like, thank you so much. We're going to handle this. So the police get their asses in gear and they tell him to take a DNA test in February of 2011. And he takes a DNA test and he finds out that he is 100% that bitch. It is him.
Oh my God.
He gets confirmation that the baby boy listed in this missing persons case is him. And he finds out his birth name. His birth name is Marks Panama Moriarty Barnes. Too many names for such a little child.
Agree.
In addition, he finds out this child, he starts like to get information about himself and he finds out he has like 10 different names, 3 birth certificates, 2 separate birthdays. And he's like, I don't know what's going on, but who the fuck am I? He finds out that his mother, Charlotte Moriarty, meets Mark Barnes on a beach a year before he is born. Mm-hmm. His dad has a daughter from a previous relationship who is 8 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. And his parents' relationship is not good. It's pretty tumultuous. Mom and dad just have different belief systems. They are not a pairing that should stay together. Like his mom, he describes her as a free spirit that she would take off for days at a time. The parents would fight, but Charlotte seemed to march to the beat of her own drum. And Mark, who has this child, you know, already, I think he's a very caring father, or I think he's trying to be, but they don't totally know what happened between Charlotte and who we now know as Steve when he was a baby. So mm-hmm. what happened was, it's June 21st, 1977. Little baby Steve at the time goes for a walk with his mom, Charlotte. They disappear. Mark, the father, has no idea where his partner and his son are. They later find little baby's stroller at a bus stop. Mm. It's around 2 days later that who we now know is the baby, but at this point it's his orphan. They find this little boy with a person in a town outside of Honolulu. He is malnourished, and this woman gives a name that is not Mark's or Steve's name, but she gives this name and she tells of his birthday. And it's the stranger. It's a little bit confusing because nobody totally knows what happened. But apparently that's when the baby was taken and put in child protective services under a different name and a different birthday, which is why they were not able to match him to the baby that that Mark Barnes, his father, was searching for. So The story is that Charlotte shows up at the what they believe happened is that Charlotte shows up at the stranger's home, gives a different name for her baby and her, gives a different birthday, leaves the baby with her, and apparently she says that she checked herself into a psychiatric hospital. What's interesting is that the birthday that Charlotte gave, or quote Charlotte gave, this theory, is that it's a day before Steve's actual birthday.
Why did she do it that way? To be harder for him to find himself?
Or I think the mother didn't want to be identified as her son. I think she wanted to put the baby up to child protective services and she wanted to make a clean getaway. And if she had given the baby's actual name, maybe the father could have found him and found her. I don't know. But the mother, they believe that considering the stroller was found, he left with his mom, Charlotte, and then she disappeared, went to a psychiatric hospital. They were never able to find the mother again. So they believe maybe she, like, Steve now believes that she might have left the country, gone to Asia for, like, finding herself, whatever it is, just, like, sort of disappearing in thin air. And he believes she eventually died over there. But they describe her as this free-spirited woman who kind of was marching to the beat of her own drum. That being said, she dropped her child off at this strange woman's house in Honolulu, disappeared, and then this woman was like, I have this baby, here's all the information I have. And what blows my mind is that they're not able to check if that missing child who goes missing shortly after Mark, his biological father, reports him as missing, how they're not able to match that up or sort of be like, hey, there's a missing child, there's a parent who's looking. They're just, I guess Charlotte gave enough misinformation to cloud who this child was.
Got it.
So in that way, Steve, this adult Steve, really doesn't know how he ended up in this orphanage. He has no idea what happened to his mother. They also don't know if this, like, strange woman who had him, was it a random abduction? Like, did she take the child? We just don't know. So his biological father, Mark, has no idea that Steve was put up for adoption. And so for years, his biological father was, like, driving around the island searching for his son. And he had no fucking clue. And interestingly enough, when Steve found out about the confusion of his origin story, or, like, the suspicious circumstances around it, it wasn't relief. I mean, I think it was a relief to know a little bit about who you are, but he recalls how he felt guilty that his biological family didn't know where he was, because here he was, and how fortunate that he found this family and Pat and Steve Carter who loved him, who are his parents, who he has, like, such a wonderful family life. And here his biological family has been existing, or his father has been existing in turmoil, and his half-sister who recalls, hey, my little brother is just gone. You know, this woman who might be my mother, or, you know, this woman who was acting as a mother figure to me is also just gone. And then she at 8 years old is dealing with her father who's mourning the loss of his partner and his son, searching for years for his biological son. And so Steve talks about how
crazy that he feels guilty about it, though. Like,
I know. But I think, but also to me, that's a testament to his relationship to his parents, you know, to Steve and Pat Carter, who adopted him, that he knows what it's like, that family love. He understands it so much that he can feel compassion to go. He didn't have to feel it. Like, he was 6 months old. I mean, the trauma of that, I'm sure, lives in him somewhere, of being, you know, in an orphanage for the first years of his life. But it's like, he feels profoundly guilty. He said, I kind of took on a guilt factor because I felt like I should have been doing more to alert my biological family that not only am I safe, I'm extremely happy. And so he feels this sort of like, why didn't I search for them earlier so they would know I'm okay? It took him a year to make contact with his biological family after discovering who he was and including
Why?
His
Did
older.
Why? Did it take him a year because, like, not feeling ready?
Or? I don't know. I assume there's probably, I mean, one, I think DNA getting in contact with them. Mm-hmm. I do think his biological father, from what I read, he did have some substance abuse problems. So I don't know how much that played into it. But he was able to speak to his older half-sister, Jennifer. And again, she was 8 years old living with her dad when she learned that this woman and her baby brother were missing. And what's interesting is this woman, Jennifer, she long believed that both of them were dead. You know, she mm-hmm. just thought they left and they died. But she is, interestingly enough, the one to tell the authorities to reopen the case years later. And that's how that age progression image surfaced. It's because I think she, from what I understand, it's like she saw this pain, this lack of closure. And she was like, you know, please don't take this missing child down just in case, even though she believed he was dead. And that's why mm-hmm. that image was there. And it was interesting when Steve talks about connecting with his half-sister, he talked about how they had similarities that were not just genetic, but they have a similar sense of humor. They both love knock-knock jokes. No, I'm just kidding. But they have just like a similar sensibility. When people say they have a similar sense of humor, it's like they both laugh. they're like, I'm sure it's more specific than that. Mm-hmm. And when his biological father found out, all he could say was, wow. Just wow. Like,
wow, wowie, son, bozowie.
Wow. It was like a little bit of like Owen Wilson. Wow. And, you know, after he lost his son and girlfriend, you know, he had a hard time. And while he got to talk to his biological father, he never got to meet him in person because Mark Barnes passed away in 2023 before he could meet him. Mm-hmm. Steve, like I said, he believes his mother. I already said that. What's fascinating, or what I think is super cool about this, is that Steve Carter solved one of the longest missing child cases in U.S. history, and it was him. He was the missing child. On a whim.
On a, hey, yeah. Maybe I should Google myself kind of vibe.
Yeah.
That is really crazy.
Yeah.
It would be even crazier if he solved one that wasn't him, because that it was feels, not his job.
It, I mean, I hate to say it, little selfish. It's like, God, I don't know. Think about the other kids. I wonder if it
made him want to solve other ones.
I wonder.
He's like, I wonder. This was pretty easy, though, because I could just look at it and be like, that's me.
Like, this was pretty easy.
I know my own birthday. Like, he had a lot of information set up for him, handed to him.
I mean, I'm fascinated that feeling of, I'm fascinated at how accurate that age progression image was, because all they had
really interesting.
Was a 6 month. I wonder if they did have him at the age of three.
How the fuck could you know?
That's the thing, is I'm wondering if they had, but no, because they wouldn't know it's him. I'm like, maybe they had him when he was four, but then they would know who he was. No, but they only had a 6 month. And it's like, that's a picture from 1991, or like, that's not like a high res image. And they're able to, like, pinpoint nose. And, like, again, they don't know who his parents
are.
And,
like, baby noses all just look like baby noses.
They all look so cute and petite. So you're sitting there and you're like, wait a minute. And then my mind, I'm like, oh, did they use the mother and father? No. Because they didn't know who he was. Yes. So they literally just have a little shit face. And they're able to project a 34. They gave the 34 self a really shitty haircut, which is kind of like a mullet and inconvenient.
But
a little bit rude.
So the personality wasn't right. But here's the thing.
Personality was inaccurate.
But how are you gonna,
crazy.
If you believe in ghosts, like, here's the thing. It's like, I believe in ghosts and I don't believe in face progression. You know what I mean? I'm like, that is way wilder than ghosts.
That, okay.
But
here's
now
the question.
Maybe I'm a believer in after your story.
It is, like, also the hair color. I'm like, where? Now, should we just, like, employ an age progression? Like, I would be curious. That would be, well, I'm sure AI has already done it. But it would be fun to, like, put your baby picture into face progression and see how accurate
it looks
it is.
Like you.
But I bet that's what they, but I bet that's what age progression is they put like a baby image in an adult and they're able to like pinpoint how that progresses. And I bet that's how they teach the program.
Like tracking other faces, you mean? Like, yes. Basically, yes. Like, what do we know about faces?
Because it's like, we know if like, if baby Carrie is adult Carrie and baby Quinn is adult Quinn, how is baby X gonna look? Mm-hmm, and so they're able to like put in all the like predetermining factors and a computer can see it. Which leads me to the question I had that I asked my dad last night. Okay. You know that there are cars that drive without a driver.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Especially in Arizona. That's actually the only place I've ever seen them.
I thought it was like only in the Bay Area. It's in Arizona.
I saw them in Arizona. You could call cabs when I was there for that Phoenix wedding last year. You could call a driverless cab to get you. We did not.
Okay, that's my question. Would you do that?
No. No.
Okay. So here's the question I have for you. Do you trust human error more than you trust computer error?
I don't think there's an easy answer. I think that all technology depends. It's too new a technology. Things are going wrong still. I don't want to guinea pig it.
I don't want to guinea pig it.
When it's vastly used, I'm not going to be like the holdout that's like, I never will trust it when everybody's using it and it's going fine. But like, it feels too new right now.
Right. I think it's so interesting though, too, is because when we talk about cars, and this is, I think, just like an interesting conversation, frankly, but it's like when we talk about cars, the reason there are so many crashes is because of human error, because like humans make mistakes. And similarly, like computers make mistakes. But I'm curious of the statistical probability of a human error over a computer error. Now, there's a world to be said of like, hey, humans make the computer programming. So is how like where is that human error? I don't know. I'm interested. I think I feel like if there was a world, I don't know. The option has never arose that I could get a driverless car, but I feel like I would feel more comfortable if every car was driverless in a weird way. But that seems silly. I don't know.
I know. I agree with you. Like, I think that would be the best case scenario, just in the sense that we'd be like, there are no drunk drivers. Like, at least it would, you know what I mean? And it would like maybe keep some people out of jail and people that, I don't know. There's an interesting argument probably for it, but I haven't really thought about it till now. And now I'm like,
when the driverless car came, did you see them come? Did you see them?
I saw them driving next to me. Like, I had to do a double take because I was like, what the wizards?
Leap the lizards. What the wizards? Can you, as a passenger though, could you sit in the driver's seat and it would drive you? Or does it look like?
What do you mean?
Like is it looks could, like could five car. People sit in the car? So the driver's
when
seat
I
is
saw
empty.
It driving by,
even
it was
though
like there was a person. That's right. The whole front was empty. It looked like a ghost. And I was like, oh my God, there's a ghost driving that car. And then Jamila was like, that's not what's happening. And I was like, okay. Is this why you say I'm your stupidest friend? And she's like, yes.
So you believe in ghosts more than you believe in self-driving cars, duly noted, and age progression. Now, were you the only holdout or were you with people that were like, I'm not fucking getting a driverless car?
Oh, no. I think none of us wanted to. It was also weirdly a little more expensive, I think. And I was like,
if I'm putting my life on the risk, that's a free ride.
Yeah, but then I remember we did have one driver that was so weird that we were like, maybe we should have done it. He kept like talking about how unfair the like system was, like whatever the car system he was dealing with, where he was basically like telling us how underpaid he was and like how angry he was. And he was really angry the whole ride talking about it. And it was uncomfortable. It was an uncomfortable ride.
Yeah. That is uncomfortable.
We kept being like, that does sound hard. I'm really sorry. Like it was like a lot of that where we were like, whoa, you're pissed. What's going on? And then we
gotta
like,
go.
And then I feel like, I can't remember, but I think that Jamila was like, don't tell him the exact address. I don't want him to know where we're staying. I feel That's like he'll fair. Come back. And at some point I was like, is he going to come back and kill us? And we were not sure.
And you want to be sure about that. You yeah, want to be sure about that. You would love especially that. When they know your whereabouts. Well, Quinn, did you tell him where you lived, though? Were you like, I live in...
I think that Spencer did and Jamila got mad. And then we were all texting. That was what was funny. We were in the car all texting each other while he was yelling. We were all like, this guy's unhinged. Like,
oh, wow.
Was like, fuck you, Spen. Why'd you tell him? Like, it was like, yeah.
That's good. Well, on that
check
note.
Your toaster oven for vermouth and have a great day.
Bye.